tell me when to welcome. Are we good? Okay. All right. So I'm going to welcome everybody. Thank you all for joining this afternoon or this morning, wherever you are. This is Ruben Rotman, the CEO of the network, and I'm here with my colleague, Darcy Hirsch, who is our network's Washington rep in the Jewish Federation of North America's Washington office. So as you all know, because you're living it, when this webinar was scheduled, which was over a month ago, our original plan was to provide you with insight and guidance and some background and context so that you could take the network's advocacy public policy agenda that is developed on a national level and bring it home to your local agencies. We were going to talk through the background and the context and the rationale for why we do this work, and we were going to give you some insights and tips as to how you can use this locally. We'd like to do all of that today as well, but we're going to probably do it in a much briefer manner. And instead, we're going to provide you with an up-to-the-minute, literally up-to-the-minute update on what has gone on today and over the last 2, 3, 4 days in Washington on Capitol Hill in response to the coronavirus and the stimulus package that is being debated in Washington right now. So we are going to get there. And in about a minute, our goal also toward the end is to open, to unmute you all, because you're muted right now, and to open the line so that we could have a discussion, so that you have a place to ask questions and we can provide some guidance and insights to you as well. So let me first backtrack and give you some very brief context and history for those of you who may not be aware. The network still considers itself to be a new organization. We're in our third year. And part of the design and the operating model for establishing the network was to create guiding pillars, which really help us to focus the work of what we do. We have 4 pillars, and one of them is advocacy. The other 2, very quickly, best practices, innovation, and partnerships. And so there was a lot of thought and rationale that went into the design of the network, gleaning on the past in terms of what our predecessor organizations had done in this space, the AJFCA and the IAJVS. And together, as we were building the new organization, we acknowledged that for far too long, the agencies in the human service space had deferred the advocacy functions to their local Jewish Federation or their local Jewish Community Relations Council. If they were involved at all, it was in a very minimal sort of backseat, bit of an assistant side role. And the state of affairs of our country and indeed our world is such that we and those who helped dream up the network really felt that it was time to bring the agencies to the forefront of that advocacy process and to elevate their role so that their level of engagement was increased. And so while we work in full partnership with our JCRCs and our federations, and in fact, we model that in that Darcy, who is our Washington rep, works part-time for the network and part-time for JFNA as its Director of Government Affairs. And in that role, she is the liaison to all of the JCRCs from the JFNA DC office, helping them to advance their domestic agenda in terms of human services and other areas of concern. Well, certainly, the work of the network is the human service agenda, so the two go hand in hand. And so we modeled that partnership through Darcy and the work that she does, and we're looking to build on that locally with the work that you all do as well. And so we do have agencies in our network that have increasingly found their way and have been able, through their own resources, to hire dedicated personnel who carry advocacy as a core portfolio of responsibilities, or they have added those responsibilities to an existing staff person who does many, many other things. But in addition, we have agencies in our network that have created advocacy committees on their boards and have found ways to insert the content of advocacy onto their board agendas and in meetings with staff. And so that ultimately is our goal, to work with you in full partnership to help you find your ways to increase the advocacy locally. And so in order to do that, we, at the network level, take a step back and we develop annually what our public policy agenda is, what our priorities are. And we go through a bit of a priority setting exercise and process where we do solicit feedback from the membership. And we work through that feedback with an advocacy committee who are representatives of our member agencies who are engaged in this work locally and who care about it on a national and on a network level. We ultimately bring what we develop to the network board for approval each year. And so that's a lot of background and context. I'm going to now ask Darcy to give a little bit more context to what became our 2020 agenda, which was approved by the network's board in early February. And we're going to put it up on the screen for you now so that you can see what this is. It's a little small, but you know, those of you that have a bigger screen can see it. It's become bigger. Yay. Thank you. So I'm going to turn this over to Darcy, who's going to give you a little bit more background as to how we got to this point. And then we're going to talk about what's going on in DC today. And then we're going to open up the floor for having open discussion and Q&A.
So. Okay, thanks, Ruben. So you'll notice that it's very small, and that's part of why we made some changes to the agenda this year. So you can see that it's quite exhaustive. It's two pages, and it's so exhaustive because you all do amazing work on so many issues, and we wanted to make sure to represent the diversity of the services that the network's members are providing in our advocacy. So the initial document was developed using a very, very extensive survey and input from member agencies, but the feedback that people were giving over the past several months were, well, what are the priorities? You have, you know, 12 buckets here on issues that you care about, but how can you say that those are priorities when you're really including everything from A to Z? So we do think it's important to keep all of the issues on the page, because when I'm going out and meeting with members on the Hill, or you're having local, state, and federal officials visiting your agencies, it's important to show them everything that we care about. But we can prioritize some issues. So this year we decided to select four issues to prioritize, acknowledging that this prioritization does not exclude the other issues that we're working on. The goal was to select four issues that we could proactively embark upon, while at the same time keeping the flexibility to speak out on all of the issues that we care about. So in September, many of you may have seen the survey, I'm hoping you all saw it, the survey that we sent out asking for agency input to select the top four priorities that you would recommend. And so after calling together the survey results, we came up with these top four items, but you will also notice that they're very inclusive. And I would say represent a large part of the work that the network member agencies are doing. So those issues are aging, children and families, including food security, immigration reform and protecting refugees and asylum seekers, and workforce and employment. So while I'm on the Hill engaging in a lot of different coalitions, keeping my eye on the host of issues that the network's members work on, these are kind of the top four that I'm trying to promote. Although that said, things have kind of gone out the window with the current public health crisis. But actually, I think I may disagree with what I just said, because a lot of what we're working on to include in the stimulus packages being worked on the Hill fall into these four buckets. I mean, these are really issues that touch our clients every single day. And I can pick something from every single category that we've been writing to the Hill about and calling the Hill about. So no one has any questions about the survey, I might just, or about the agenda, I might transition to what's happening on the Hill. Or did you want me to add something?
So I also wanted to remind everybody, we do have a chat feature in the chat box. And I think because we don't have a huge group, we're going to do something very bold. And we're going to unmute everybody. Because I know that a couple of the committee members who are involved with our advocacy committee, Nancy and Laura, are available, correct, Darcy?
Yes.
Who might want to participate? Okay, so maybe this is a good time for Nancy and Laura to chime in before we go to the coronavirus discussion, or should they be part of the, when's the timing to bring them in?
Well, I'd ask them to talk about their work regarding the coronavirus on the state and local levels, but we could start with state and local before I talk about what's happening on the Hill.
Okay. Ruben, I'm going to stop sharing so you can see everybody.
Yeah, that's great. And let's unmute everybody.
Did you admit everybody or no?
I'm going to do it right now. I don't see a thing here.
Okay, so I'll do it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Here we go, they're all coming in. Okay.
All right, so Nancy, do you want to speak for a couple minutes about some of the issues that you're confronting with the public health crisis and how what you're advocating for on the state and local levels?
Sure. I don't know why. Is video showing up on your end?
It is. We have a lovely picture of your dog.
So that's weird because my camera should be on.
Okay.
I don't
that's
know.
Okay. What... So, and maybe you could introduce yourself to everybody.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure why video isn't working on this at all. I'm not seeing anybody. So I'm Nancy Volpert. I'm the Director of Public Policy and Strategic Initiatives for Jewish Family Service Los Angeles. I am a member of the Advocacy Committee, and Darcy and I have been talking about 18 times a day via email over the last week to 10 days about everything that's going on in DC and also in California, where, as most of you I'm sure know, we are under a safer at home order in both the city and county of Los Angeles and a remain at home shelter in place order from the governor. And so our state has obviously, we weren't first in, but we are certainly well engaged in this. And so we have been having changes in what that means for all of us. It feels like daily, but our agency, like many of you,
a second.
Oh, well, hello.
Yes, we're promoting everybody to panelists so that we can you can see us.
Uh-huh. Yay.
We're working our way through all the technology. Yeah. This is what we're doing, all of us. So here you see it in live. Yeah.
I love technology. So I was starting to say we're adapting to changed orders. It feels like every day between the mayor and the governor. And so where we've been is on a, it's a multi-pronged response, like I'm sure most of your agencies. We've been trying to support the federal legislation that JFNA and NJHSA have been advocating for that Darcy's going to talk about. But we also have had the California Association of Nonprofits led a letter that was signed by, at the end, something like 500 nonprofits of the state, urging the governor and legislature to make sure that any legislative responses include and take care of the nonprofit community. So we're kind of doing split emphasis, a lot of work on how do we as an agency make sure that our funding continues, that we're funded for our new service models, all the telehealth pieces that are coming into play, and how that works, and making sure that the loan repayments and sick leave and all those policies that nonprofits like ours are included. And then there's a whole other piece of trying to support our programs as we are trying to deliver services in new ways. And of course, both senior meals and pantries are considered essential services. And yet we've had to move all of our congregate meal sites to home delivered, which started today. Last week we were giving to-go meals, and the city and county banned that partway through last week. And so we're trying to figure out how we staff for that, because of course anybody who's delivering meals has to have gone through a full background check, fingerprinting, and all of those, as well as, not to mention, insurance and those pieces. So we've got all of that going on. And then at our pantry, it turns out the bulk of our volunteers are over 65. And so they're all home. And oh, by the way, probably half our staff for that program are also over 65, which is leading to all kinds of interesting things about that. So I've been in touch with and heard from legislators and legislative staffers at every level of government. And I've been trying to work with them both to let them know that they can keep sending people to our central access line. They can keep sending their constituents to us. We're still here, we're still working, we're still doing, teleservices as much as possible. But I'm also reaching out to them to say, hey, any chance you can help us find masks, gloves, not robes, what are they called?
Gowns.
They call them surgical gowns.
Thank you. My brain is a little fried. So we're trying to both get help from them and let them know that we're still here for our community members and supporting legislation and providing comments and action alerts. I will say, I'm just going to make a pitch for our friends on the top row of this call. I have taken the alerts that were sent out by NJHSA last week. I added a personalized message at the top, just above theirs, and I sent it out on Friday because there's no way I have time to rewrite everything. So right. Because they've been written in such a way that are easy, I just, forward to our board. If you have time, please help. And I will encourage you guys to also borrow from their work. So Darcy, anything else?
That was great, Nancy. Can you talk a little bit about the contract issue? I saw your letter that you're advocating to the state to get them to ensure payment of contracts.
So we are concerned, as are many of our partners, that we aren't going to be able to meet our deliverables, our contract numbers, because, even as some of our contracts require X number of home visits or X number of meals served, if people don't want to come in or don't want to let us into their homes for understandable reasons, and oh, by the way, we're not going into anyone's homes, we want to make sure that we will be kept whole as much as possible. And so there's actually this is part of a statewide effort to try and have flexibility on what the deliverables are on our government contracts. There, especially in places where there isn't often a lot of flexibility, it's interesting to see, you know, this push, this move from congregate meals to home delivered is, I find fascinating because OAA has never allowed us to move between them. It's something we've tried for, I don't know, for the last 10 years. And this time they just ordered it and we're like, oh, okay, we're figuring it out. But it's interesting. But we do know that the timeliness of our services and the numbers served are likely to not match what we had contracted for. And so we're trying to figure out, how do you manage that? And I can share, I shared it with Darcy, but if anybody wants to see the Cal Nonprofits letter, Darcy can share it or I can send it. I'm looking at Darcy, yeah?
Yeah, we can share it. Yeah. We can share it to the participants in the call. And I'd also like to share it with the advocacy committee because I think it really puts down on paper a lot of the issues
that
we're having.
It's definitely a universal issue that we're hearing over and over again from lots of our agencies. There's a tremendous amount of concern. You know, the other concern that's bubbling up is the face-to-face, which is now being done by telephone. And telephone is not a reimbursable platform through Medicare and Medicaid.
Right.
And we have a lot of agencies that are just doing it anyway because they need to provide service to a population that does not have access to a HIPAA compliant platform. Even if the agency has one, on the client end, they don't have a computer or internet or a smartphone and so, or a tablet or anything like that. So the agencies are continuing to provide services on landline phones that are not going to be reimbursable. That's another example of the need for advocacy and education about this is a crisis situation. And hopefully some states will become a little bit more flexible with what their guidelines are.
I have a quick question for Nancy. Hi, Nancy. Can the National Guard assist with the home delivered meals since you all are one of the three states that they're allowed in?
It's an interesting question. I reached out to the California Association of Food Banks this morning to find out that question. And right now they've only been deployed in Northern California as sort of a test, but the answer is not yet, but I'm trying to figure it out. We think the requests are going to have to go through the city or county office of emergency services, which shouldn't be an issue, but not yet is the short version.
Well, thank you, Nancy. I'd love to have Laura Rogers from JFS Atlantic Coast speak about your work, and you actually have a success you can share too, and then maybe we can open it up and see if people have more questions for both of you and for Ruben and I.
Hi, everyone. I hope you're all taking good care, and it's great to be with you this afternoon. It feels kind of like a shelter in the storm right here with all of you. We do a lot of our advocacy, or most of our advocacy, through a lot of statewide partner organizations that we participate in. One is the Housing and Community Development Network of New Jersey. I happen to sit on that board. The Anti-Poverty Network of New Jersey, the New Jersey Association of Mental Health and Addiction Services, the New Jersey Psych Rehab Association, and the Supportive Housing Association of New Jersey, just to name a few. So what I'm going to mention, some successes, some things that are still in process, that all happens within these organizations that we're a part of. The first, which let's start with the big win here, is that the governor of New Jersey, and I have to say that the government response has been very good related to what our agenda is focused on at the network. The first big news is that the governor signed legislation. This was legislation. Some things are executive orders, some things are legislation to put a halt to all evictions and foreclosures for the length of the crisis. Not 90 days, not 60 days. This said for the length of the crisis. So this is huge. So there can't be any filings of evictions or foreclosures during this period of time. And that is a big deal. The next level advocacy for us is around mortgage forbearance. And in the lead with the Housing Community Development Network, there's more state that advocacy that can be done than it seems federal at this point in time. But we're looking for really robust forbearance, not what we saw during Superstorm Sandy, where there was forbearance for 90 days and then the mortgage holder had to pay all of the back mortgage payments at the end of 90 days. So that wasn't really meaningful to people. So what we're advocating for is forbearance that extends the loan and adds that, I don't know all the terminology, but I think you can understand that it's more helpful to then have it on the other side of the loan. So I know there are federal advocacy around this as well, but we're working hard on this at the state level. We also successfully advocated to be considered an essential service within the state. We're now under a stay-at-home order in New Jersey, but as a social service agency and as a food pantry, we are an essential service. Within that, we are also trying to gain access to supplies such as cleaning supplies, hand sanitizers, masks, and beyond, because we provide homeless outreach services. So we really need to gear up our staff to be able to get a bit closer to the population. We're doing social distancing. That's not a great way to engage people on the street, but we're trying to use that designation to also advocate through our networks to get the supplies that we need. The governor also signed a robust unemployment plan in New Jersey. So that offers benefits to people at their average salary for the past year. So that is really strong. What we haven't succeeded yet in is $15 million from the legislature to go to the three largest food banks, which then come down to food pantries like ours at JFS and Atlantic. And so that advocacy is still happening. I just checked in with the Anti-Poverty Network and that hasn't moved yet, but we're trying to make sure that that moves, because I know that we could all speak to this. We've seen a big influx in need already. We are also advocating for homeless resources so that we can get proper quarantine places for people to go. We're really concerned about further stigmatizing the population, and we just need resources that, you know, speak to the humanity of people who don't have a home right now. And then we've also been advocating regarding telehealth, and it looks really good in New Jersey. That's all been piling through today, and it does look like we're going to be able in New Jersey to bill for phone contact. I'm not clear about therapy, maybe someone else knows, but for our behavioral health homework and our case management work, we bill a few different Medicaid services aside from counseling that will look good for telephone and video. So we're hoping that's also true for counseling, which isn't ideal, but for people who need it. And of course, then we need people to have active phones. So for our case management programs, we've been spending a lot of money on track phones and minutes and getting those out to people, first and foremost, to make sure that we can know that they're okay, and then to hopefully be able to provide some services as we move through the next weeks and months. Anything else, Darcy, that you want me to add to that?
No, I mean, that was a fantastic overview of all the, I mean, I can't believe, I don't know how you, if you're getting any sleep at night, I mean, all of you are just working so hard. But it's
amazing. No.
Does anyone have any questions for Laura? Do you have any similar, you know, similar issues, different issues, anything you think this group would be a good sounding board for? Okay. Well, I mean, it sounds like New Jersey's been very supportive. And we all need to keep working on the food security issue. Why don't I kind of give you a brief overview of what's happening on the Hill, and I could talk about what some of our priorities are moving forward. And I would love to hear from everyone to know if you agree with our priorities, if you have anything to add or any thoughts on those. So I'm sure you all know that the Senate just failed its second vote on the third stimulus package. That we were really hoping. I mean, it's funny, I was speaking with people yesterday morning. We really thought this was going to pass yesterday. And I think a lot of people thought it was going to pass yesterday, but clearly there is a quite a divide between what the Republicans and what the Democrats think is appropriate. The main sticking point is really who this direct economic stimulus is going to go to. So this is a nearly $2 trillion package at this point that, is an economic stimulus to workers and taxpayers and businesses, including nonprofits. But it seems that the Democrats are concerned that the funds could potentially go to CEOs and not necessarily go to the people that need it. I just saw that the Senate Republicans' second attempt this afternoon did not include non-child dependents. So dependents such as, you know, older adults older children with severe disabilities would not have qualified as dependents. So that's just one sticking point. I mean, at this point, Nancy Pelosi and the House have already introduced their own bill, which is completely separate from what's being negotiated in the Senate. There's still a chance that if the Senate Republicans and Democrats can come together, that the House bill will be set aside. Some are seeing it as really as a messaging bill that's just kind of running along in tandem with what the Senate is doing. I'm sure you have seen the many action alerts coming out from JFNA and from the network. Thank you so much for reaching out to your members on those issues. Just to reiterate, we're trying to make sure that all public charities are able to participate in the small business interruption loan program that they're including in the Senate bill. The current language does not include agencies that accept Medicaid. So that eliminates some of your agencies, Jewish nursing homes, workforce development agencies, and group homes. So that's really, really a critical issue for our network. And we're working hard to make sure that leadership understands that you need to be included. We're also working on ensuring that $60 billion of economic stabilization funds for emergency relief through loans and loan guarantee programs for nonprofits are specifically set aside. And we're also working to increase the non-itemizer charitable deduction as much as possible so that it could lead to an infusion of cash via donations for nonprofits. I think the limit right now, the Senate bill is including, the Republican bill includes a $300 deduction. We want to up it to, I wrote it down, $4,000. So it's really minimal at this point. So our key messaging for this Senate package has been on the nonprofit, these nonprofit support issues. They are not on specific human service issues. The House bill that passed last week had some funding for food for older adults, for SNAP, WIC, other food programs, HHS programs. And we kind of made a strategic decision that in order to focus our advocacy and make it the most effective, we would focus on the tax and the small business interruption funds. Because then phase four, we can focus again on more of the human service issues. So I hope that makes sense. This bill is really all about business. So we wanna make sure that our messaging is commensurate with what we expect to pass in this bill and what we've heard from our contacts on the Hill and our coalition partners. That said, you know, fingers crossed that we get everything we want in this, in a bipartisan Senate bill that we hope will pass this week. You know, giving the name throwing between McConnell and Pelosi and Schumer, it doesn't, there's some question, but we're hoping that they can come together in the next couple of days. Moving on to the phase four stimulus package, which could pass in the next few weeks or could be something that we work on for the next few months. JFNA, we're floating and, you know, we want to get the network on board. We're floating several items to work on in four categories. One is health and human service spending to increase Medicaid state reimbursements. We're also working to increase the emergency food and shelter program and to secure more nutrition funding through the Older Americans Act and through SNAP. We're also looking for supplies and new services to prioritize vulnerable populations. So the masks for nursing homes, the gowns, et cetera, that we had mentioned, you know, to ensure that older adults and individuals with disabilities have the services and the resources that they need. And we're also looking at the flexibility for the telehealth, the mental health telehealth issue. I'd be happy to answer any questions on those items, or if you think that there are other issues that we should be aware of, please let me know.
Darcy, I'm wondering, this may be a little loaded to ask, so you could say you can't go there, but do you have a sense of why the Senate felt that Medicaid recipient agencies should not be included in the stimulus package?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I think it's endemic to the kind of the perspective of the, you know, kind of Republican leadership, that even the stimulus checks that they had put into that package don't go to families that don't have reportable income. So it's, that money's not even going to people who need it the most.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I think it's a broader lack of understanding of the true needs of the community from this perspective.
Yeah. Okay.
Darcy, I heard part of it is because they don't want Planned Parenthood to get the money.
Oh, right. There was that New York Times article or Washington Post article I didn't have time to read yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, why not punish poor people more ways?
Right.
So given that we don't really know where this is at, it feels like all the efforts are focused on getting this package passed because it's as best as we're going to get, and then looking for ways to fill in the gaps with the other initiatives that you mentioned at the end.
That's right. And many of you, I know many of you are in all kinds of coalitions, local, state, and national coalitions, and you may be seeing emails flying through your email, you know, inbox about advocating for other human service items to be included in this package. There are other groups that are advocating for those items. We just made a strategic decision that given the focus, the economic angle of this package, that it would be better to focus our resources on the items that I listed for now.
Does anybody have any local, aside from what we heard from Nancy and Laura, anything else on the state level that you'd like to share with the group?
Kristen, you're muted, Kristen.
Sorry, there's child noise in the background, so I was trying to keep that at a minimum. I'm wondering if anyone's dealing with a shelter-in-place order and the management of group homes or congregate living. I'm just seeing those. We don't have that yet, but I'm just seeing those come over. I think Wisconsin just did a shelter-in-place.
Right. So I don't know that we have any on this call at the moment, but I can tell you that the agencies that have shelter in place or the states that have shelter in place that have residential programs, there are HR implications in terms of coverage and whatnot, and additional hygiene protocols being implemented where all the staff and all the residents have to have their temperatures taken all day long, like every 3 hours, and significant increased protocols around cleaning and social distancing. It's very, very challenging. We did a call last week for agencies in our network that run residential programs. You know, there's no rule book on any of this. So it's very, very complicated. I don't think that's helpful, but I'm just,
no,
you know.
I appreciate it. I'm sure that folks from JEVS will, if this becomes something that's happening in more, I'm sure that you all will do another call, and I'm sure that there'll be folks from JEVS that'll hop on those calls. I just, I'm seeing this literally right now, Wisconsin shelter in place pop through my email, so I'm just curious.
This is Linda Foster from Denver. We actually took action to have our residents leave the group home before any shelter in place could come into place. We were able to, we had two that are from different states, but we had places for them to go to, and all the others went to their families because we didn't know any other way that we could really, really handle it. So we did take action prior to, and our governor just last night, he didn't put a mandatory shelter in place, but put in a request for shelter in place that people really honor and do that except for the essential, those who are essential. So it doesn't feel really great to do what we did, but we felt that it was the safest and healthiest for our residents. And so that was what we did.
I think we will be doing another call on this because it's getting more complicated. And the agencies that were on the call last week, they were not mandatory at that point. You know, it was all suggested. And it's been very confusing, as you know, because there are governors that have said this is a suggested. And then all of a sudden, 2 days later, it becomes a little bit more enforced. And I mean, I'm living through this at home. We're all living through all of this sort of at different levels, depending on where we live. So it's been confusing, you know, just for residents in the communities, let alone organizations that administer residential programs.
And, you know, I think it's also going to be different what kind of residential programs, because our domestic violence shelters are still up and running and all of the residents are in. We do have increased cleaning and pieces in place. We're actually, for whatever reason, we're under the public health department purview for the county anyways. So they are continuing. We have limited the number of families in the two emergency shelters, because those are very much congregate living, as opposed to our transitional shelter, which is more private apartments. But I think it's going to depend, Ruben, as you pointed out, on what kind of program it is, because we can't close our DV shelters. You're already seeing the stories and reporting about the increased incidents when people are being sheltered at home with their abuser in stressful times. It's not so good.
It would be really, really, I don't think that we could group homes. A lot of the individuals that live with us don't have families, and they're also older and medically fragile. So they've got complicated care plans to start with. I don't know what we
would do. No. I can tell you the agencies that were on our call last week, it was never a consideration to close the program because the individuals who live in those programs don't have another option. So this is, you know, I think Denver's situation was unique, to be honest, and very appropriate for that agency and that community. But that's not the universal process that the agencies are following. Anyway, any other questions? I'm sure we're all drowning in questions, but is there any other, update? From my seat, I can tell you that information is changing so quickly that it is so hard to keep up with the pace and the content in order to get it out in a manner that is appropriate and meaningful. I will put a shameless plug only because we're sending lots to CEOs and trying to decide what goes to who and which message gets out. Darcy did mention briefly, we've been sort of pulled into a crisis that several agencies have reached out around the ability to secure gloves and masks and other protective gear. Simply because the vendors that they typically purchase these products from, they don't have them. And in states, when they do get them, the priority is going to hospitals. It's not going to community-based agencies, even residential programs. And so we, through the resources with JFNA and with another sister association, the Association of Jewish Aging Services, which supports Jewish nursing homes and other senior residential programs, we are partnering with some vendors and some funders to try to access large quantities of those items at either a very reduced or no cost. And so there was a very, very super short survey that went today to CEOs asking if your agency provides home care services or residential services and you need these supplies. We asked just a few questions so that we could try to get a handle on the scope of need. And so I would ask each of you that have services in that arena in your agencies to follow up with your CEOs and get those responses back as quickly as you can, ideally, tomorrow, by the end of the day tomorrow, because we need to move on this very quickly. And I think it was like, honestly, I think we asked three questions. So it should, if you need it, you know how to answer them. And if anybody has questions, they can reach out to me directly. So I do have that request. And other than that, Darcy is available, I'm available. And thank you all for the work that you're doing. This was not the general intended content that we wanted to talk about, but frankly, the urgency of the situation really does help you to bring the advocacy agenda home in very timely and relevant ways. I will also let you know that we are talking also through resources that JFNA has been able to marshal and the Jewish Funders Network to have some dialogue with Jewish funders to fill in gaps with whatever the federal stimulus package does not address. So we're not sure yet how all that is going to land, but there's going to be another survey coming out tomorrow or maybe even later today that tries to get a handle on the financial impact that your agencies are beginning to see. And even if you don't have your full arms around those numbers yet, giving us your best estimate as what does it mean to lose a full day of revenue, a full week of revenue, a full month of revenue? What programs are you most concerned about? There are a series of questions that help us to get, again, our sense of the national scope of what the impact is for our agencies. We want to translate that into a case for giving that we could communicate both to government funders, but also to private philanthropic funders, because there's going to be gaps on both sides. So that survey will be coming your way soon as well. All right, Darcy.
Quick plug. So we're hosting a call on Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern with the Deputy Secretary for Aging from the Administration for Community Living. I hope you're able to join us. We're doing it in the format of a Zoom webinar because we think participation is going to be so high that people are only going to be able to ask questions on the Q&A on the side. But if you have a question, we're putting together some questions we're going to ask him and also some advocacy demands. So if you have some questions about, serving older adults that you think that they can clarify, I know they released, as Nancy mentioned, they released guidance last week about flexibility between congregate and home delivered meal resources. If you have a question about that or anything else, or if you think there's something we need to tell him, please email me and I will work that into our remarks. And I'm also gonna send an email to the advocacy committee about that, but I hope you can join. It's a great opportunity to hear firsthand about what's happening from the administration.
Okay.
And thank you all for taking the time to be with us.
Yes, thank you everybody. Be well, stay safe.
Stay safe.
Thanks, bye-bye.